date is July 19th, 1991, and we're watching Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Bill to my Ted.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, I mean, it's way back in episode 3 with our first guest. We talked about making Colin watch this movie at some point in the future. Well, the future is now, people. And so we brought back the guest from our episode 3, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, my son, Chris Wells. Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah,
Chris is the Grim Reaper to our to our Bill and Ted.
Exactly. Yes. It's because he raps a mad rhyme.
Definitely. Yeah.
So this week we're looking back at July 1991 when the movies in theaters were Terminator 2 Judgment Day, Boys in the Hood, Regarding Henry, Naked Gun 2.5 The Smell of Fear, and of course our movie for today, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which earned $38 million on a $20 million budget.
Not terrible.
And as always, there will be spoilers ahead because this movie is 30 years old. That's right. It's 30th anniversary. We didn't
talk about it,
but it is. It just happened to be. So there will be spoilers. If you don't want this movie spoiled for you, please hit pause now, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Yeah, it's always nice when it's like a milestone year for one of these movies.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even if we don't plan it that way. Well, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have five. First, hell hath no pizza.
Nice.
I don't know.
I think that's funny.
I must have missed. Is that our actual reference from the movie?
Nope. I don't even remember them eating pizza in the movie.
Okay, I'm glad because I was like, I must have just missed something or not like stopped paying attention for a second when they were in hell.
I mean, one of the original possible titles for this movie was Bill and Ted Go to Hell. So at least that first tagline leans into the hell aspect of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, well, second we have Bill and Ted Party On.
Classic, of course.
That's Wayne's World.
Oh,
come
shit.
On! I mean, number 3, It's a Trip.
Sounds okay.
They're really not doing it for me this go
round. No. Fourth, we have Whoa, Dude, Pressed Hams.
They
what
don't
the
even
fuck
do
is going
hams.
On? I mean, the only thing I can think of is the poster. I used to have this poster hanging in my room. I wish I still had this poster. But back when I lived at home, this was one of the posters on my wall. And the poster famously looks like they've got their faces pressed up against the against the poster. So, I mean, it's not asses, but, I mean, maybe that's in reference to the image that they created for this poster. I don't know.
Even then, it's a stretch. That's just weird.
Yeah. Well, fifth, finally, we have one that seems to make sense. Once they made history, now they are history.
There we go.
That one's the money. that was the money one.
That's the only possible one that is. But it may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
All right. The year is 2061, and former history teacher and sit-up champion Chuck Denomalos decides to send evil robot versions of our heroes Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan back in time to kill and replace Bill and Ted to stop them from winning the Battle of the Bands and making a speech, thus preventing the music of the Wild Stallions from bringing peace to the world. In the present, Bill and Ted are preparing for the Battle of the Bands and are newly engaged to their babes when evil Bill and Ted show up and promptly murder them without much effort. Now, on the other side of the veil of existence, Bill and Ted must battle their way back to the land of the living by defeating death, escaping hell and heaven, in order to make it back in time to stop evil B&T from executing Denomalos' nefarious plan. Will they be able to do it? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
I love the detail that he is a sit-up champion. Like, that's just such a random thing. Like, are there sit-up championships out there? Like, is there a world record in the Guinness Book for sit-ups?
Well, that probably exists.
There's for sure. There's for sure a world record.
Do you think it's most, or do you think it's like fastest in a minute?
I feel like both exist.
Yeah. I'm gonna say the main one is probably most consecutive.
Yeah.
Like most without doing a considerable stop.
Yeah. World records get like ridiculously specific though. It's like balancing an egg specifically with a ladle and your right set of teeth, not the left side of your teeth.
Yeah.
Kind of deal.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's probably both, and then there's probably variations.
Yeah, like there's probably
variations,
like,
and then putting stuff on your shoulders or whatever.
Well, I mean, like the presidential fitness test or whatever, or like even the fitness test that we used to do back in the day in like
back in
elementary
the day,
school.
Yeah, it was like excellence.
It was like how many sit-ups could you do in a minute? So there's probably for sure a record for that. And then I bet there's records for all time denominations. So like, how many could you do in an hour? How many could you do in a day? How many could you do like total? And how long did it take?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
How many could you do underwater? How many could you do like with a dog like licking your face?
Exactly.
How
many
can I do on a train in the rain?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is one of those movies that, I mean, I loved the first one when I was a kid, and I remember I saw this one in theaters. I was so excited when this one came out, and then I saw it, and it appealed quite a bit to 13-year-old Sean. But, you know, spoiler alert, I don't know if 43-year-old Sean feels quite the same way, but it definitely does veer the Bill and Ted characters off in a different direction. But this, like I said, I had the poster up. I had the soundtrack. I loved this movie. What about you, Chris? What's your experience with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
You know, I was just trying to think about that while you were talking. I wasn't really listening. I can't really think of my first experience with this movie. I assume it had to have come in tandem with the first one.
Yeah.
Because I'm young, unlike you two. But
yeah. You're a completionist, too, when it comes to series.
Exactly, too. So, yeah, I assume it must have come shortly after. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know. I assume it just must have. I assume you liked it, but it must have just dropped off since when you first watched it. But, I mean, I liked it. I think it's fun to give them something more than just another journey through time. Like, that was interesting. That's what kind of what you would expect, is just them to do a similar thing with maybe a different cast of history, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't remember when I first watched it. I assume it was when I watched the first one. So, return to the first episode.
Have you seen the have you seen the new one yet?
The new one, yes, but okay. I paid half attention to it, I'll be honest.
Yeah, you know, you were on your phone for half of it.
Not exactly as good as the first two. I don't know. It didn't catch my attention.
So, Colin, now, we discussed way back in episode 3, and we discussed in our retro episodes as well, that you hadn't moved on because you expected we were going to be doing this in the future. So, now that you've seen this series, or the second in the series, are you going to go on and watch the third one, or did this one stop you dead in your tracks?
No, actually, I like this one better than the first one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we can get into why later, but I really enjoyed this movie. I will now go and check out the third one because I'm also like kind of a completionist when it comes to series like that. Yeah. But I gotta be honest, I'm apprehensive about it. Like, we talked about this with Bad Boys, but like, I don't like it when a lot of time goes by for a sequel. Like, okay, it just rarely ever ends up good.
Yeah.
And so I'll watch it, but I'm going into it a little trepidatiously, as you'd say.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's jump into Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Like I said, originally titled Bill and Ted Go to Hell, the only reason that name was dropped is because they were squeamish about putting that kind of title in front of American audiences.
That's what I figured, yeah. Yeah, okay.
And so that's why they changed it to Bogus Journey. But, I mean, Bogus Journey is so much more appropriate.
This is God's land.
So much, yeah, exactly. But it's so much more appropriate for these characters, right?
So yeah. He's got to sell in the flyover states, Colin.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. The Bible Belt. It'll be, yeah, like, it'll be like when Kevin Smith made Dogma, and it was
exactly
just like...
yeah.
Yeah. It's directed by Peter Hewitt, produced by Scott Kroof, and written by Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson, who were the writers on the first one. And we open this movie in San Dimas, California, 2691 A.D., and Denomalous, who is played by Joss Ackland, who we saw back in Mighty Ducks, is monologuing about how much he hates Bill and Ted. By the way, Denomalous is Ed Solomon spelled backwards.
Oh.
That's how he got his name.
I was wondering what that was. I thought it was some sort of Latin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds Greek to me, but yeah, it's Ed Solomon backwards. Clever. Yep. Clever writer of the movie. Good job. And then we cut to Bill and Ted University, established 2425. I have a question here. Now, we kind of established the last time when we talked about the first movie that this whole future seems to exist because Rufus kind of liked these guys' music, and if it wasn't for Rufus interfering, then this future would not have existed.
Mm-hmm.
Why did it take 500 years for them to make a university for these guys then?
Well, yeah, it wouldn't have been established by Bill and Ted.
No, but, like, why is it 500 years after Bill and Ted that they're kind of like, wait a minute, these guys are someone that should have a university? And, like, their whole future society is, like, based off of Bill and Ted. Like, the budget in this movie must have gone up significantly from the first one. But I think they spent it all on these really weird, awkward-looking costumes made of neoprene.
I bet those cost nothing. I bet you that's why they look,
yeah, I was
so
gonna
silly.
Say, those costumes look like bad cosplay. Like,
exactly,
it
yeah.
just looks like they took big, massive hunks of foam and, like, clipped them onto sachets. And
exactly,
then,
yeah, that's what I kind
of like. And then found
about
some
it,
old
just, like...
80s neon and...
Exactly,
but
yeah.
They look like they're walking in ski boots. Like, that's yeah. how these guys are. Like, it's not practical at all. And, like, Denomalous with his light that shines up in his face, that's embedded in his collar, like, that would be annoying.
My theory, my fan fiction, rather, is that after Bill and Ted unite the world through music or whatever, the world actually enters some sort of dark age.
Okay.
And 450 years later, there's a renaissance where they go back to the old ways of thinking, i.e. the Greek and Roman ways of thinking, classical, etc., and they reestablish a university in Bill and Ted's name and start to rock hard or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say similar, yeah, that I like Chris's theory. Like, at the end of the movie, they have the whole rundown that kind of like shows the history of what happens, like, going forth from
yeah,
the concert
through the newspapers,
and,
yeah.
And I almost like to think that, yeah, there was some sort of cataclysmic event, and then it's like, as the world emerged from the darkness, it was like, for some reason, the only thing left was, like, the writings of Bill and Ted. Like, there was some Bill and Ted collector that collected all these newspapers and magazines and CDs yeah. and whatever, and then
San
they were
Dimas,
like...
California was all yeah. rubble, except for the wall where they painted wild stallions in the garage. Yeah.
They the excavated something out of San yeah. Dimas, California that became the foundation of a new society.
Yeah, they were like, this will be the cornerstone of our new age.
Yeah. Well, and they must have found something Faith No More as well, because there's a joke that doesn't hold up. It's like, Faith No More, huh? Sir James Martin of Faith No More. And it's kind of
yeah,
like,
get...
yeah,
yeah, do you know who, do you even know the band Faith No More?
I have no idea who Faith is. Even at the end, when you were at the battle of the bands and they have Primus playing, I was like,
yeah,
man.
They're the South Park theme guys.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, Faith No More, they have that one song, the "You Want It All all, but you can't have it.
No? Oh, I think I do know that
what
song.
What is it? It is. What is it? It, no.
It sounds like it
that's,
might appear
that's
in
That's the one song of Faith No More I know.
It sounds like it might appear okay. in an episode of Smallville.
Yeah.
Before we move on, also, I want to say Bill and Ted University, little fun fact for everybody. I've written here in very big letters, fun fact. It's the Japanese garden slash water reclamation plant in Van Nuys, California. It's also the set where Austin Powers has sucky with a lot of vagina. Another episode we did. So it's also the biotome, and it's also Starship Academy and Star Trek. So
nice.
A lot of places filmed there.
Nice. Time for a little The More You Know jingle. And then, of course, there is the other Star Trek connection.
Which I have something written down about that,
yeah,
too.
Which is the rocks, the Vasquez rocks. So, yeah, we've got those as well showing up in this movie. I mean, and, of course, we also have Star Trek. But
which, if we're talking about the Vasquez rocks, also a little bit of an Austin Powers connection. It is Dr. Evil's lair.
Dr. Evil's lair, yeah. So. It's in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Yes, short it is, circuit we discovered way back in episode 6. Yeah. But, yeah, see... Back when we did the first Bill and Ted, I mean, I was saying that how much I appreciated that they didn't try to do too much with the future. What do you think, Colin, about the future that they have presented to us where you must make sure that you wear your headphones when you're studying or don't do your homework without your headphones and the glasses and like, I don't know what, I mean, we've already talked fashion, but what do you think about the future here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like they need to do a little when it comes to the future, they need to do a little bit more like explanation on why people like believe what the because as far as I know, you don't ever see like Bill and Ted doing homework. So I mean, it's just they've taken all these like teenage tropes and applied them to the future.
Yeah.
But I also felt that like in Excellent Adventure, the future seems more how do you like mystical
yeah
like they have those like they have those like three or whatever that tribunal
yeah
and
you don't go outside it doesn't like you don't ever see the actual earth you don't see a tree or anything
the only technology you see is the phone booth
exactly yeah
so. Yeah so it was a you got to see I guess more of like the outside world but I was kind of struggling to figure out like how it fits together or if like Excellent Adventure is even further in the future from this point on or something, but I don't know.
Well, I think that one was 2689 because he said 700 years in the past in that one. So yeah, so
oh, okay.
Yeah, so this really is 2 years after.
2 years later.
Yeah.
Plus, yeah, Rufus
both
is
the
still
past
around.
And the future. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Technology, you know, you could be immortal or whatever.
Yeah. It's true. They also mention at the school that they've got a field trip on Saturday. Like, really? I mean, with your point about the fact that you never even really see Bill and Ted doing homework, like, why do they have a university named after them, of all things? But, yeah, I mean, a field trip on Saturday, like...
Well, university.
Yeah, I guess.
I know people who had to go to, like law, what are they called? Trials? Yeah, go watch a trial or whatever for a class.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
On a Saturday?
Well,
I didn't
I think
law courts were open on
I think
Saturdays.
They had to pick a whatever. I wasn't in the fucking class. Don't ask me. I'm just saying university, it makes a bit more sense that there's a random field trip on a random day.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what did you remember from our conversation on Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? Like when it came to this movie, were you going in blind when you got to this movie? Or did you remember that we had said that there was like a bit of a Terminator aspect to it?
Yeah, no, I remembered absolutely nothing.
Okay.
about what we talked about. I didn't listen to the episode. Like I thought at one point like maybe I should listen to the episode to kind of like refresh, or even I couldn't even remember what I actually thought about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. In my mind I remember liking it, so that's kind of the mindset I went into it with.
Yeah.
And I was thrown off by the like the robotic Bill and Ted idea.
Yeah.
I thought there was gonna be more of them going through time again
exactly,
situation.
Yeah.
Or that they were gonna somehow like have been when even when they first show up before they start peeling their face back. Yeah, I thought there was cool gonna be back. Something where they had like been tricked by Denomalos or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was an interesting turn, but it was one that I liked the Bill and Ted like go to hell aspect of it. I thought it was actually more interesting than them just rehashing the last one and going back through time and all that stuff again. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
Well, one thing I will say, though, that I think is a huge missed opportunity. I mean, you have this movie that takes you to heaven and hell, and they didn't bring back anybody from the previous movie. I mean, yeah. What a great opportunity to have Lincoln in heaven instead of Ben Franklin. Like, it, mm-hmm. Hey, Abe, you remember us? You know, like, it would have been great to have something like that.
Lincoln wasn't exactly the next.
Yeah, that was the one thing I thought that the movie was missing was the, I mean, they have Death, and Death was awesome.
Great, yeah, perfect.
But I would have liked Station. Station didn't do it for me. Station, I thought, was strange.
Yeah,
they could have used... Yeah, they could have used like a couple more people along with them, I think.
Yeah, and one thing I don't understand about Station is, you know, when they find Station, he says, "Well, you just assume that the smartest person in the universe was human?" And it's like, "Well, looking around heaven, yeah, I would assume that because I don't see anybody else that isn't human walking around right now." Mm-hmm. and I mean with heaven, I also don't understand the fact, where are all the senior citizens? Like, do you appear how you died, or do you appear in a sexy form of how you died? Because like, that boxer has to walk around shirtless with gloves on for eternity. Is that what you're telling me?
That might be hell.
And did he die in the ring then? Like, is that what went on? But
also, there were no old people?
No old people.
Well, that makes sense. I wouldn't want to go live eternally as a crippled, decrepit old person.
Yeah,
so, I'd want to go back to, like, peak age. I'm sure it snaps you back to wherever you were in your prime.
Yeah.
Your peak.
Yeah. That's my hope.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, and I mean, hell is such an unusual...
I love it.
It's, but, like, I mean, the choose your own hell, but I don't even understand their personal hells.
The personal ones are weird.
Like, yeah, I'm afraid to kiss my grandmother, so how does that work for eternity? I mean,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, no pushing a boulder up a hill and having it crush you or whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like the idea of the fact that for both of them, Oates Military Academy would be hell. The drop and give me infinity. I
that
love
was
it.
Great.
Dude, I don't think I can do infinity push-ups. But like, okay, that I understand, is you're going to have this guy in your face for eternity. But, like, the Easter Bunny, it's like... Am I just stuck in this one room eating chocolate and then getting yelled at by a rabbit for eternity? Like, where's the punishment? Where's the punishment in having to kiss grandma, even though, like, oh, man, like, Alex Winter in that makeup is, like, so disgusting.
Well, the rest of hell was, like, just rooms that you couldn't stand up straight in,
yeah.
Which is what I really like. Like, that set design's really fun,
that,
where it's
that's
just,
cool.
Like,
yeah,
just kind of uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, it would just piss you off. It's not really hell, but eventually it would definitely get to you.
Yeah.
I'm wondering now if there's a deleted scene where they go to like a place and find out there's no pizza or whatever. They're spending eternity without pizza.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Or without their favorite pizza topping. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can have it. It's just, yeah.
Oh, we've got pizza, but it's got
olives.
It's only
only deluxe.
Only deluxe.
That would be my hell.
Yeah. Which is what's your pizza of choice then?
I mean, I'm a Hawaiian guy.
See, I'm a Hawaiian lover too.
That's controversial for you guys to take that stance.
It is true. A lot of people don't like pineapple.
Guys.
But...
You guys are begging to be canceled.
And Panago has this. They have this amazing.
Oh, the sauce!
Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, the
tropical sauce.
Hawaiian. Oh my god,
dude!
Forget about it.
All right.
I know what I'm ordering tonight. So,
not sponsored. Not an ad.
So, yeah, I mean, we end up cutting to our audition for the Battle of the Bands, where we get Pam Grier as Mrs. Wardrow. I love her line about the, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that you guys work for Pretzels and Cheese, and then we find out that Pretzels and Cheese, like, it's not even like her making a joke of, you know, you guys work for Peanuts or whatever. Like, I love that psych out.
Yeah.
But she says that she'll put them on last. Maybe people will have gone home. Like, isn't last traditionally the most prestigious spot to have in a band competition or a band anything?
Yeah, everybody sets them up and you knock them dead or whatever, yeah. Right? Yeah. But, I mean, if the rest of the show sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, theoretically, if it's a concert, yeah, the headliner would go on last. But, I don't know, I've never been to a battle of the bands, but it strikes me as it would be kind of like...
Yeah, I've only seen them in movies.
More like an open, yeah. Like an open mic type situation.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you know, yeah, being last... If everybody sucks and there's no, like, there's no energy by the time, if you're the last person to go on, that might be terrible. Or people have gone home. I suppose so,
yeah. But, you know, before we leave the fact that they work for Pretzels and Cheese, I think we need to go to Sponsorship Corner.
Ah, there it is.
Oh boy, this is a big one. And Pretzels and Cheese is like one of the only fictional companies.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't think that's real.
Yeah, but always, but on the banner for the Battle of the Bands, they are also sponsored by Reebok, and I forget what the other one was. It's in my notes here somewhere. I just don't remember specifically what it is. But always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is brought to you by. Buckle up. Circle K, Pepsi, Mountain Dew, and Miller Lite Beer, Hostess Twinkies, Lay's Ruffles and Doritos, the games Battleship, Clue, Super Bowl Football, and Twister, Volkswagen, Geo, and Porsche Cars, Builders Emporium, which, interestingly, that Builders Emporium, that's the same mall that they filmed Back to the Future in. Mr. Coffee, Black & Decker, Incinerator Garbage Disposal, Touch of Class Paint, Reebok and Adidas, Marshall Amplifiers, Saban Cymbals and LP Bongos, Marmite, Weetabix, Swing Arm Lamp. This is one, I just put Swing Arm Lamp. This, I don't know what the brand actually is, but they prominently display this... this swing arm lamp on multiple occasions while Station is building the good robot us's. The TV show Star Trek, the book Voices from Beyond, and the radio station KNAC 105.5 FM, plus many bands. I know I didn't catch nearly enough of them. Things like Slayer, Metallica, Faith No More, Alice in Chains, all over Bill and Ted's room. I didn't even write them all down. And of course, the periodicals San Dimas Gazette, which may be fictional, TQ Magazine, which is definitely fictional, and then the San Francisco Chronicle, Billboard Magazine, London Daily Sentinel, Whole World Magazine, Washington Journal, Osaka Telegraph Mail, Science Discoveries, Road and Tracks, Sports Illustrated, Circus, Chicago Bulletin, Premier, Spy, The Hollywood Reporter, Rolling Stone, and the International Herald Tribune, plus the fictional KJM Channel 5. And Pretzels and Cheese. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, once I got to the newspapers, I'm like, it's Fast and the Furious all over again.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, one thing I love with the Circle K, it's implied in the movie that it's the same Circle K because they've actually got like a square burn mark on the ground from the first movie, but that's not actually a Circle K. That is a 7-Eleven, and they digitally put the Circle K logo on the front of the building for that scene. Nice. And I'm like, that is fucking hilarious.
Like, correct me if I'm wrong, I remember Rufus being in more of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
He was definitely in less of this one, by far. But, I mean, in the first one, it was only because he showed up because he had to teach them how to do stuff. I mean, we're supposed to believe that he was Pam Grier all along. Is that blackface?
I mean, well... he's wearing a rubber suit, so I don't know that it's necessarily... He seems to be wearing... I don't know.
But how, like, how would it come across if I put on an Obama mask?
I don't know about that. I don't know where the line is crossed.
Right?
Where the line is crossed when it comes to stuff like that. I don't want to... I don't want to take a solid position here until I can do some research.
But on the subject of where the line is crossed, you may have noticed that our homophobic F word got dropped not once but twice in this movie.
Yep.
Like we said in the first one, they doubled down in the second one. So there's the part where it's, even though you're going to kill us, we love you, man. And there's one of them. And then the other one is in hell, I think, where he says, get away from me, or something like that. Yeah. So
interesting. Yeah. For whatever reason, I remembered more Rufus in the first one. My one criticism of this movie was, like, I would have liked him to have shown up more in this one.
Yeah. I think if you combine what Pam Grier did and what George Carlin did, that would add up to the amount that George Carlin did in the first movie. Maybe he was just busy, but they're like, we got to get him back. You know? Yeah. Who knows what he was doing in 91. He was growing out his ponytail. That's for sure. It was definitely longer in this movie than it was in the first one.
Didn't George Carlin like never take a day off the road or whatever? Like, wasn't he always doing stand up? Cause he was like perpetually like broke or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've even read like his biography and everything, but I don't remember. It was a while ago.
I mean, I guess technically, like, Bill and Ted were dead for a lot of the movie, so even if he was around, he probably couldn't have...
That's true, yeah.
...met them anywhere.
Unless it's future hell.
Yeah, they went to future hell.
Yeah. Well, okay, so you mentioned him earlier. We gotta talk death for a little while here. I mean, played by William Sadler, who I definitely know from Die Hard 2 as the naked man doing Tai Chi in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Best moment, in my opinion, of the entire movie is when they're playing Battleship and like he loses and he's like, what does he say?
Best two out of three.
Best two out of three. And they're like, no way. And then the camera just cuts to him. Yes, way.
Yes.
Well, see, and I remember talking in the last episode about how there was one genuine reaction out of Keanu Reeves that I liked in the first movie where he didn't get beheaded. And in this one, there was one from Alex Winter where it's just all of a sudden when he says best two out of three and he says yes way and Bill goes, what? It's just the way that he says what, it's like, yeah, it's almost like they didn't give Alex Winter that part of the script. He's like, whoa, wait. It's almost like he was actually reacting to not knowing what was coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, I must say I never knew the word Melvin before this movie.
No, I had to Google it just because I have a great little line here. But anyways, yeah, Melvin.
What?
Well, Melvin is where you pull it, the underwear up in the front, right?
A wedgie? It's in the front.
Yes, you specifically pull the underwear up in the front. Yeah, because when I watched it, I was like, I leaned over to me, I was like, did they grab Death by the dick?
No, they wedged him from the back.
No, a Melvin is a wedgie specifically from the front. If you Google what is a Melvin, it's specifically a wedgie from the front meant to harm the other person's genitals.
Yeah, well, I'm saying in the movie, it looked like they grabbed him by the back.
Okay,
yeah,
well, I saw front, so I guess this is a white and blue dress versus a gold and whatever the fuck the colors were dress.
I'm gonna back Sean on this one because the execution is they hit you in the balls so you bend forwards and then they wedgie you from the back.
That's what they were doing, yeah.
Okay, well then they're using the term Melvin incorrectly and they've made me look a fool.
Well, see. I guess what we're saying here is ultimately, though, the thing that you're trying to do is harm the genitals.
Yeah. Either way, they looked like they grabbed death by the dick. And grabbing death by the cock is akin to grabbing life by the horns, and I think that's hilarious.
Cue the rim shot.
That's all I wanted to say, but you guys had to shit on my ideas. You had to go and disprove my theory. They said Melvin.
And you go into this deep dive about Melvin and you're like, oh.
I just wanted to say my shit joke. God damn it.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know. Either way.
Either way, I'm going to start telling people to grab death by the cock.
Yeah, grab death by the cock.
Look, yeah. on the BillandTedFandom.com page, they say, Melvin serves as a running gag in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. A Melvin, more commonly known as a wedgie, is a prank where the perpetrators pull up the back of the victim's underwear, painfully compressing the genitals.
Were you like on like Urban Dictionary?
Maybe I just didn't read back of, but I just Googled what is Melvin and read the first thing.
Like, getting hit in the nuts is a Rochambeau, right?
A Rochambeau is a competition, not a prank.
Oh, okay.
Because the Melvin, because in a Roche.
Sorry, this is the wedgie article on Wikipedia. There is a section. on just the Melvin.
Uh-huh.
The Melvin is a variant where the victim's underwear is pulled up from the front to cause injury or at least severe pain to the victim's genitals. The female variant is sometimes called a Minerva.
Oh, like McGonagall. So
nerd.
See, I mean, J.K. Rowling likes having like double meanings in her name, like the fact that Professor Lupin is a wolf, right? I mean,
that's not double meaning.
Is Minerva because Latin, she's like a cunt? Oh, a painful one. Sorry, go on, Colin.
It seems like. Whenever it's referenced in relation to Bill and Ted, a Melvin is like akin to a wedgie. But to Chris's point, when you just search up what is a Melvin, they like unrelated to Bill and Ted. It's the front pull.
Okay.
Thank you.
So all we are all right. We are all correct. But
that's the problem with the internet.
Yeah, well, they did not film it that way.
I agree to disagree, whatever, man.
But yes,
we'll find the video and we'll post it on our Facebook page and
yeah, you whoever be the whoever judge, yeah.
Yeah,
Instagram poll, yeah. Oh boy, yeah. So yeah, death. I dig all the games that they have to play, and I like when they get dejected and they're like, best 5 out of 7. Yes, damn straight.
I like that they played Clue. Yeah. Since we recently recorded that movie, it provided some context to how the game is actually played to me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, did Clue? You geek out at that moment? Yeah, when we recorded Clue, he had no idea, like he had never played the game even.
That's like one of my favorite games, like one of the best board games for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's never played it.
That's crazy, man.
We had to teach him the rules of Clue.
You should come over and play Simpsons Clue sometimes.
Yeah, Simpsons Clue.
Sounds good.
But now, with Death, or with William Sadler, did you notice that he does make a cameo in this movie as well? He is the British guy. When they're doing the song that's broadcast to the world, or when Denomalous broadcasts everything to the world.
Right.
Yeah, he's the father of the British family, and the woman and the child are his real-life daughter and wife. Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't even notice.
Yeah, that one.
That's what Death looks like with hair. Yeah. There's a couple other cameos in this movie. Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon make a return. They were the Ziggy Piggy waiters in the first movie. Mm. But in this one, they are the two men at the seance, at Missy's seance. And the director makes a cameo. He's the guy in Builder's Emporium that he's smoking. And Death has the great line of, I'll see you soon.
Nice. That's actually... I did love the gag of Missy now dating Ted's dad. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Oh, it changes again.
In Bill and Ted Face the Music, does that come back?
Good. It changes again. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope she's married to one of them.
Well, and I love when they're at their party for the princesses where. They're trying to figure out exactly how to process this information because Bill instinctively says, you know, sorry, Missy, I mean, Mom, right? I don't know. I just like how they catch us up on it. And it's like, oh, that's ridiculous. And then when you get to the third movie, it's like, it's even more ridiculous. It's even more brain melting.
Nice. Can't wait.
there's some great moments in this movie, too, where I like when they're falling. And they're playing 20 questions. And it's, are you a mineral? Yeah. Are you a tank? Yeah. Like, it's like, what?
Like, well, there's that. There's also when evil Bill and Ted show up, and Ted's like, if you're really me, how many fingers am I holding up? Yeah. And he just pulls out like three.
No, how many am I about to hold up is what he says.
Or how many am I
about to hold up is the key. Yeah. Or in the van, you know, oh.
You're right.
I'm a real dick to myself. I'll have to remember to be better. He said, shut up, Bill. Yeah.
I thought the movie was going to go... I didn't think they were actually going to kill them. I thought the movie was going to go another way where, like, the two pairs get separated somehow.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a weird... Or they, like, they're so stupid that they all forget who's the robot and who's not.
That could have been a fun way. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they're very good at playing evil, though.
Mm.
Like,
yeah, I have a note here that fascist Bill and Ted still seem kind of chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They come out, like, spouting, like, fascist beliefs or whatever at the very beginning, and then they still do it in kind of a chill way.
Yeah, let's play basketball with our head. Let's throw plates at the wall. I don't know. I'm wondering how the landlord in that building reacted when they decided to put Wild Stallions on the door, or the big WS, spray paint that on the door. I mean, you guys don't own that apartment.
Like, yeah, probably not well.
Yeah.
Not well. I also thought when Station makes... I thought they were going to have, like, another pair of, like, good-looking Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Not these weird... tin can piece together robot villain Ted. So cool,
like the human hands over the puppets or whatever. I look great.
Yeah, I remember thinking that the first time I saw the movie, is like that they were gonna take all these random pieces like Dustbusters and everything and yeah, they turn out to be perfect. Like, I thought that was where the joke was coming from. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. No. But I love how Death is so proud that I made the wigs. like he's so attention seeking, and like he's such a sympathetic character, and that's one of the things that I definitely love about Death. Yeah, Station I could have done without, but Death is awesome.
Also, what would you guys play Death in a game of?
Oh.
I have written here just to get it started off. I would play Death in a game of Tony Hawk Underground 2 Horse.
Okay. Okay. Oh.
I think I'd play Death in a game of Trouble.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I have uncanny good luck, and I'm for whatever reason I am very good at that game, so I feel like I could beat him.
Yeah, I don't know which way to go though. I mean, it's like, do I pick something that I think I'm great at, or do I pick something that it's like, well, it's just luck of the draw? Like, do I play Candyland? Do I roll dice against him? Like, you know.
I think the trick is to pick something really new, because he didn't seem really up to date on those games. I mean, you have to think, he's probably playing, what, like, dice for hundreds of years or whatever people played?
Yeah. I mean, I
would be really tempted to play him at Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Yeah. Just leave it completely up to chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or have
playing a coin toss.
Yeah, have a hot dog eating contest against them. Coin toss, yeah. Play Death at heads or tails. Yeah,
fuck it.
Woo! Yeah, play Death at war. See, I mean, there's another one. Like Candyland, war. Like, those are all ones that are random.
52 pickup.
52 pickup. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. I play him at solitaire.
Solitaire.
Play him at Minesweeper.
Yeah, crib maybe.
Ooh,
crib might be good.
Yeah. Could be good. Yeah,
I mean, I had some pretty good Street Fighter skills back in the day, but ooh, I'm too rusty. I mean, the Tony Hawk one is a pretty good one, because there was definitely a year or two of my life that I spent stone playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Oh yeah,
so
the classic.
Before it got all fancy, though, with sketching and or Skitching.
Skitching?
Yeah.
Back when it was just basically arcade.
Yeah.
You just went through with your 2 minutes.
Evil breath? That evil robot usses have evil breath that knocks Missy out? Here's one that I don't understand. This is a sequence of events that I don't understand in this movie. Okay, they go over to Missy's house. They crash the car. They come, you know, busting through the window. They knock her out with evil breath, kidnap the princesses, and then, like, 2 scenes later, when the Battle of the Bands starts, Missy is getting onto the couch with her friends to watch the Battle of the Bands. There's no mention of the fact that Bill and Ted came and knocked her out. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, help me understand this sequence of events. Do you think they just forgot?
maybe evil breath also gives you amnesia.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay, there we go.
Maybe like they the, have like the men in black thing. Neuralizer.
Yeah.
Their eyes blink.
I was gonna say, don't you think that a more appropriate evil Bill and Ted to execute Denomalos's actual plan should have just killed Bill and Ted and then become like straight laced
students.
People like students and like upstanding citizens who don't smoke pot and don't drink and don't party and all that.
Don't worry, and then just in a band. Yeah.
Evil Ted should have gone and slapped his dad or something and got Ted sent to military school or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And just not have gone, like, wouldn't his goal have been accomplished if they had just not gone to the Battle of the Bands at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like so. they just said, oh, we're not gonna play music anymore, and we're just gonna go live lives.
But ultimately, though, wasn't their plan to murder people live on television? Like, that's what they were going to do. Is for their finale, they were going to slaughter the princesses on stage.
I would make everybody truly hate Bill and Ted.
Yeah, so these robots were programmed to come and do time in the clink. Is basically that's how I read it at that point. Is that yeah, if you're going to slaughter someone on stage, yeah.
The robots could have just done the Bender thing where they went back in time, they murdered Bill and Ted, and then they just hung out in a cave for 1,000 years till somebody turned them back on. Like, it's such a convoluted plan.
That's true.
They could have just murdered them and left. They didn't even have to look like Bill and Ted.
Yeah,
I mean, they could have peeled back the rubber masks and put new ones on even, yeah. Just started a new life completely.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, plan. I again though, it's a Bill and Ted movie.
Well,
that's
true. I mean,
bro, we gotta think about sandbags. Snap.
Yeah. So now that you were already primed on being able to handle the whole idea of remember to do this, were you able to follow it when they were doing that at the end this time, Colin?
With
the cage and the gun and the.
But I was just kind of like, I don't know. It seemed, I wasn't sure if I had missed something, like they had set it up, or if they were just literally like, no, like we've already. Because as far as I can tell, Bill and Ted, they never see the phone booth.
Yeah, they have no like access.
Real Bill and Ted. They have no idea where the, like, how did they go back in time to do anything? And, like, it never plays out to the point where, like, we're just assuming that somehow they got past Denomalos, I guess, into the phone booth. Went. But, like, because it never plays out, buying the idea that they could just be like, oh, well, we, like, you know, I'm just going to think, like, we've thought 10, like, the whole chess thing, we've thought 10 steps ahead of you. I don't know. It didn't really work for me.
Yeah, it definitely didn't click as well this time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing with this movie, is even if they're not going to follow the same formula and do a time-traveling adventure, they do throw in these fan service moments. And so something like that, it's like, oh, okay, this is the thing from the first movie. Or there's, what was the other one that I'm thinking of? The quoting music lyrics when they're trying to get into heaven, so they quote some Poison lyrics. I mean, it's just like the dust in the wind part from the first one, you know, like it's what's the meaning of life? Every rose has its thorn. Of course it's poison. Why wouldn't it be poison? I love how proud Death is of his, like, his apron. He's always, like, making sure that his apron is nice and flat.
Like, yeah.
Well, he never gets to branch out with his outfit. He always has to wear that drab black cloak.
Yeah. It makes me think of Toy Story when Buzz Lightyear is dressed in the doll clothes having a tea party.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I will say that when Bill and Ted die, I enjoy what they did with the ghost Bill and Ted.
Mm.
I mean, the effects when they, like, jump into his dad's ear and, like, the seance and everything, like, they're terrible.
Also, the double effect. Yeah. If you actually, like, watch any of the actors in the background while it's supposed to be both Bill and Ted's on screen, it's just clearly another dude.
Yeah.
Like, they really didn't hide it as well as they definitely could have.
I like the washed out makeup that they had on. You know, the black and white clothing. Like, I thought that was kind of a clever way of, oh, okay, this is how we'll do this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a neat interpretation of ghosts.
I really like that. I didn't understand why they were so adamant about, like, setting up where they throw them off by showing you that Star Trek clip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple scenes before, and then it's like did it really matter? Did it really matter it's that it's the Kirk same the same Gorn. Clip?
Well, I think it's just fun. It's the whole look what we did. We did that thing that it they just, did.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I agree though.
It just seemed like that was for, like, the director of photography or the director or somebody. Like, somebody was just so proud of themselves to set that up. But
yeah, and especially with, like, the big, like, zoom out, the fast zoom out and everything. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. With the music, with the sting on it,
The cinematographer insisted on this shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
He said, I'll do your cinematography, but we have to shoot at the Vasquez Rocks.
Also, Bill and Ted's bodies are amazingly unharmed.
Yeah, and they land perfectly next to each other.
Having fallen so far.
Yeah, he pulls the worm out of his ear, but that's about, dinner's over, little buddy. Yeah. But, I mean, like, I also just don't understand, like, why can't Bill and Ted, like, even fake it for a couple of seconds in their life? You know, like, they possess Ted's dad, and he's like, okay, so here's the thing. Evil robot people have come from the future. And it's just kind of like, just assign someone to go out to the Vasquez Rocks. There's two dead bodies at the Vasquez Rocks. You, go. You know, like, it's just, come on. Fake your way through things better.
But it's not as funny.
Yeah. That's true.
Bill and Ted, they're just a picture of earnestness. They can't be anything but who they are.
They're not sellouts, Dad.
They're loved.
Maybe that's a lesson for us all.
Yeah. No, they're loved by everyone except the evil robot thems. Yeah. I like how with the evil robots, though, they try to throw every possible effect your way, or, like, cheap gimmick your way. It's like, okay, we're going to have the head in the waste paper basket. We're going to have, you know, like, they do the eyeball thing in three different ways. So there's the one where, like, Keanu hits himself on the back of the head and it's in his hand. Then there's one where they're just, like, peering through it, like, it's still in his face. Like, yeah, they do it three different ways, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, okay.
They open up their chests a couple times.
Yeah. Like, there's the one where, my favorite has to be when Robot Ted is holding Robot Bill's head,
and it's just
under his arm, and then they cut to him, and it's just like, you can see how much Alex Winter is straining to keep his body out of view with the way that he's being held. Yeah. But then they cut to the far shot, and it's like, oh my god, like that doesn't even look like him.
Yeah, I thought that scene where they're throwing the heads around was, like, it should serve as an inspiration for any wannabe amateur filmmaker to just kind of, like, it really just shows you what you can do with just a few little camera tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
to make the scene go, and it's like, back it's like 91 or whatever. Like, they don't even try to hide the fact that, like, the fake heads are just, you know, these plaster, like, rubber casts. Like, they're so obviously fake. Whereas I feel like nowadays, you know, there would be like a whole bunch more CG thrown on that scene so that it would look more real. But
yeah, they'd throw a deep fake face on it or something.
Something like that.
I mean, yeah, you know, like you said with the people in the background with like when there were multiple bills in a scene, that's one thing. But like when they're walking up the Vasquez Rocks, they did a really good job with the body doubles in that one. As they're climbing up the rocks, it's like, I don't know which one is which for the most part.
And they were smart to always have the evil Ted with the normal Bill and the normal Bill with the evil.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was hilarious anytime they like showed their like internal organs and it's this, you know, all of
you
a sudden
see the scene.
Like I'm to believe that Bill and Ted have like full on six packs and like massive pecs.
Yeah.
Like these guys don't look like they've worked out a day in their life.
Yeah. But yeah, I like how you see this, you can see the seam where they're going to open their chests.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay, one thing I don't get is Station. And I'm not even talking about the alien. Like, I read that the word station was used in this movie because originally there was a typo in the script. And for some reason, they were, like, punch drunk at that time and just, like, thought it would be hilarious to keep it in. But I don't understand why everyone yells station. Like, if it was a typo in the script, what was it supposed to be? But, like, that's the Faith No More guy's thing when he gets out of the phone booth is the station, and then we got they yell it at the concert at the end, don't they? And station says God. Like I just
yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, but it's station... funny hearing you even just repeat that. It's funny. It's like an inside joke. Yeah. It's like it's not a real thing, but like if you've seen that movie, it's like something you could say, and somebody else who's seen that movie would be like, "Oh yeah."
So station. Are you saying we should try to bring back Station?
Well, I still the fact that God says Station, that's hilarious. I think that's hilarious.
I didn't get anything about him.
Yeah, like you said, it's you know. I don't know. It gave them an opportunity for a butt joke, I guess, when Station the alien merges. So there's that.
Oh yeah, that alien puppet had a really long butt crack.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I thought I kind of feel like to your point before is like this would have been an opportunity to bring back Ben Franklin to make the good Bill and Ted robots if they were going to be so clunky like that.
Yeah.
Station is the one aspect of this movie that I thought kind of just threw me for a loop. I didn't get why he was there. I really didn't understand the weird sex meld. I don't even know what that was like.
Yeah, the weird into the, joining the, blob. The, yeah.
Yeah. Because they also don't explain it. They're literally working, and then they just run out into the parking lot, do their thing, come back as one
giant,
giant guy or girl. I don't know. But, yeah, I didn't get it.
Well, and it feels like their hands would have been able to handle like more meticulous electronics work if they had stayed smaller with smaller fingers. Now you've got fingers the size of sausages and you're supposed to like be screwing in tiny little screws and stuff. I don't know, it just feels awkward now at this point.
Yeah, it was strange.
Yeah. And so you did get a chance to see that once again the princesses aren't used, but
yeah, that's the thing too I wanted to bring up. It's like you'd think they'd switch actresses because they decided to give them a little bit more of a character this time around, but they still don't fucking use them.
Yeah,
I like there must be like deleted scenes or cut scenes from the script or something. Like, just makes no sense.
Yeah.
Unless like the director parted ways because they like were terrible to work with. But I can't imagine the actresses who were basically extras in the first one were hard to work with.
I'm sorry, you guys all just got engaged. So like, and if Bill and Ted were truly trying to keep up a facade, I feel like they would have, you know, kind of like tried to stay with them a little bit longer, and maybe you would have had the actresses be like, "Hey, you guys are really weird. Something's up with you." And then maybe have a part of the movie where they're like trying to figure out, you know, you'd have like the A story of like Bill and Ted with Death trying to make their way back, but the B story could have easily been more about the princesses trying to figure out what's up with these, like, what's up, like, just what's up with Bill and Ted in the real world. But yeah, they just kind of get broken up with, and then you don't see them for a while, and then they get captured.
Yeah.
And then they're just hanging, and then...
Yeah, you have this whole B-plot that could exist.
Yeah. No, and that, yeah, you're right. That's absolutely true. Instead, we have to basically use the princess as, like, a prop. Oh, yeah. And so, in some cases, it's funny. Like, I love the proposal scene, where they're both... I wrote this last night, and one of them is all about, like, desert animals, and the other one is all about sea animals. But I love, like, the audio transition as it goes from one of their speeches to the other. Like, that's funny, and the plastic rings and all that sort of thing. But then later on, you're just, you know, the robots have full-on robot chubbies, and they're, you know, assaulting them. And you're right, it could have been a great opportunity to have the girls be the heroes of the day until they get captured. As soon as they say, wait a minute, something's wrong, that's the point where it's like, well, I guess our ruse is up. Let's kidnap you. We don't have to go use our evil breath on Missy.
Yeah.
And our neuralizer breath.
Oh, I find it funny that evil Bill and evil Ted, they just, like, accept death at the end. Like, they do nothing to defend themselves. They're just like, oh, well, it's happening. I'm dead, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta love that. Yeah, it's like, oh, well, here they come. Yeah, they don't even try to fight back. They just get their heads knocked off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go. That segues into the finale of this movie, where, of course, we are at the Battle of the Bands, and Denomalous shows up for the big showdown, and we have that whole bit, and then we get the reveal that Rufus was there all along, because who else would have let them into the Battle of the Bands? But I love that they both stand there and go, wait a minute, we don't actually know how to play. Like, I love that it's like 4 years or 3 years later since the first movie, and they still don't know what they're doing as a band and have to go away for a little while. But when they come back, what the fuck are their outfits? Like, especially Ted.
Bill is like ZZ Top.
Yeah. But Ted has, like, Ted looks like a baseball catcher. Like, he's got that weird chest plate that he's got on, and, like, what are they wearing?
I was going to say that Ted looks like current day Johnny Depp.
Oh, my God. Yep. Yeah, he's just got less bracelets.
I don't know. Johnny Depp, people should look it up. He has this, I can't remember what company it's for, but he's, like, sponsor of this perfume company, and it's like him.
Oh yeah, no, it's Dior.
Yeah,
it's
Dior. It's like him playing guitar in a purple desert with all these panthers and large cats around him. Like, it's so weird. But yeah, their outfits are pretty hilarious, and they accomplished this all in 16 months.
Yeah. Well, see, what the one thing you don't know about that commercial, though, is that was actually filmed by paparazzi.
Oh.
So that was just him hanging out in his backyard.
There we go. Yeah.
He wasn't even paid for that ad. TMZ was.
Well, when I first saw it, I was like, I thought this guy got canceled, but apparently he's still good enough for Dior.
But yeah, you're right. 16 months. I mean, well, except for the 2 weeks they took off for their honeymoon. Or was it 18 months? Either way, still, it's a tremendous amount that they've learned in this short amount of time. I do like, though, that, like, the kids that they've got, you know, meet little Ted, meet little Bill. And I love how those babies are very boy looking babies.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill and Ted are the little Bill, little Ted are women. In Face the Music.
Oh, really?
Or I guess teenage girls. They're not women yet. But yeah, it's little Bill and little Ted are girls in Bill and Ted Face the Music. So it's like,
oh, interesting.
Oh, good thing they were like infants and you could get away with pulling the old switcheroo on us there.
Yeah.
Well, they had to make the new one more diverse and all that sort of thing.
The other thing I don't remember from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, but I could have swore was true, is I thought that they had learned how to play at the end of Excellent Adventure. Like, I thought, for some reason in my mind's eye, I remember it ending with them, like, playing actual music.
No, it was Rufus that did. He came with new guitars.
Oh, okay.
And then says to us, don't worry, they do get better.
Okay. Okay.
Right,
but obviously not in 3 years.
Yeah.
Bill and Ted, they during that 16-month vacation they took, they went to that that rock camp that Homer goes to.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's what it is.
Yeah. With what is it? Who's there? Maybe Mick Jagger, maybe?
I don't even remember.
Who knows? Whatever special guest cameo they went of the week.
They went to the Jonas Brothers Camp Rock.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. They went Camp
That's
Rock.
That's exactly where they went.
That's actually a YMCA camp in somewhere near Toronto. Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we close the song with, or close the show with, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, a song sung by Kiss. And I gotta say that I've always loved this song. And this was my backup song that I was going to sing when I auditioned for Canadian Idol.
Hmm.
I ended up going with Hooked on a Feeling. And Sweet Caroline was also in my top three. But yeah, this one, it came down to the top two is... that, yeah, I was going to use this as an audition song for Canadian Idol.
Well, it's not too late.
Yeah.
Not too, well, is Canadian Idol coming back?
Well, yeah, I guess it's...
Or the voice or whatever. I don't pay
attention
now.
to Canadian reality TV. I just assumed it had never left.
Oh, no. That one, I think, only lasted like 3 seasons.
All
okay,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they didn't pick me. Yeah. That's why.
I mean, I like that song. I like that song a lot. God Gave Rock and Roll to You.
That's good.
See, I mean, the thing about like one of these idol shows is that shows you that I'm a middle of the road performer when it comes to singing, because I'm not good enough for them to put me through to the talent, to like, you know, Sass Jordan was one of our judges, but I'm also not shitty enough to get the William Hung treatment and be thrown into the embarrassing auditions either. So middle of the road, Sean. That's how I like it.
Nice. I mean, not a lot of people. I remember this show vividly because of how I think it had to have been the most traumatizing TV show in television history. But shortly after American Idol came out, MTV did like a similar show, but it was specifically made to find the worst singer. But they pump all these
audience was in the joke.
Yeah, they pump all these people through as if they're the best, and people are cheering. And this person is so shitty. And by the time they got to the end, this girl won and just thought she was like the bomb. Like, she was crying and she was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, and all this stuff. And then she finds out that I'd be really curious to know what happened to her, because I remember watching it, and it's not very often that I feel like I should stop and turn off my TV, but that was one of those things where I was like, I feel like I'm a part of something that is absolutely terrible.
Yeah, you're an accomplice.
Well, you know, it's the type of TV you just can't turn away from, just like Andy Bernard breaking down on the next acapella star.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there we go.
Wait. Oh, no. Why didn't Bill and Ted, like, they play this song. They play this song, right? And you're supposed to assume, I'm thinking, that this is their song. But they're so clear.
The one that changes the world.
Yeah, they're so clearly not singing at all that...
Yeah.
I thought that was strange. I thought it was weird that they're not like at the mics or anything. They're just playing the guitar while the singing is happening.
Well, are you a Tenacious D listener at all?
Yeah.
So you know their song Tribute, where they're talking about the song that they used to beat the devil, but they couldn't remember it, so they're just singing a tribute song to the song that they can't remember. So maybe that's what it is. Is this is playing over the song that, for some reason, is lost to the world.
There you
because
go.
In the new movie, they still haven't found that song.
There you go.
That unites the world. Well, there we go. That's Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Now, Colin, Chris, on IMDb, it scored 6.3 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 60%. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 57% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 56%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a controversial Melvin. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Rotten Tomatoes user Michael S. says, 3 out of 5 stars. Half the film is great. Bill and Ted's journey to heaven and hell, their interactions with death, Ted possessing his dad. Alas, The rest of the film is clunky, and the final battle of the band showdown did not hold up well at all.
Possessing his dad. I'm still a little unsure about that. I don't know. Did he do a good Ted impression, you think?
Well, it's hard to tell because Ted's character is just a stereotype, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
But, I can tell you that the guy who played Ghost Bill was terrible.
Yeah, he was pretty terrible. But we saw him before in Arachnophobia. He was the mortician in Arachnophobia.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't even notice. Asif K gives the movie 3.5 out of 5 stars and says, "This movie was a step up in every way possible compared to the first movie. The introduction of the character Death was the best thing that happened to the movie, which elevated it to the next level. The Hell and Heaven scenes were the best, and the running joke of the character Missy is hilarious. The end sequence with all the good characters and the bad guy trying to one-up each other is by just saying the action required without actually doing it was hilarious, and all the small reveals that happened during and after the face-off was cheery. Cheery on top." I think he meant to say cherry on top, not cheery.
I still wonder how they got the flag inside the gun.
Yeah.
How did they know what gun he was going to use and all that?
It's a movie. Come on.
I mean, at least the key, they said, "We planted the key for you to find." Did they plant the gun too for him to find? Okay, sure.
No, they went to a 16-month course on how to engineer a gun, and they just, I don't know. It's a movie, come on!
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, I'm criticizing a movie where half of it takes place in hell and heaven. So, yeah, okay.
All right, I need to confirm, yes, this is a 0.5 star out of 5. Jeffston Y says, "Never watch this movie with anyone you want to associate with after viewing said movie. It is so inhumanly bad that it caused my grandfather to have a seizure. Every day I contemplate on who hurt the director of this movie, because no sane human could have ever pooped this out."
I want to know more about that story, about the grandfather that was...
had a seizure.
That had a seizure because of this movie, yeah.
Well, so did my girlfriend, so. I mean, that makes sense to me, at least.
What part?
It was kind of, throughout. Just a periodical seizing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Another 0.5 stars out of 5 review. 5.
I don't
Ned
think the
D.
movie could have caused the seizure. I don't think that's a point against the movie.
There's no strobe effects. Yeah, maybe you should have looked more into your grandfather's health history before you wrote that review and made sure that this was the first instance of epilepsy.
Maybe don't take the frail old 90-year-old to the theater. Any loud noise will knock him over and break his pelvis.
Off the rails again. Next review.
All right. Ned D says, "This was awful in the purest sense of the word, especially in comparison to its hilarious predecessor. As you watch Bill and Ted descend into hell, you yourself will invariably follow. Station will haunt my nightmares for all time."
That's it?
And then the last review I have is from Alberto M, 3.5 out of 5 stars. He says, "I found this profoundly fascinating, an ode to uniqueness. This is the perfect example of a sequel that didn't play it safe. Weird, unique, ahead of its time, risky. As years passed, this movie became a cult movie by its own merits. Ending sequence may have served as inspiration for 22 Jump Secrets ending credits. The inclusion of the death..." The inclusion of the death added so much comedy. Great character.
I don't know whether, 22 Jump Street, did it end with, a bunch of magazines on the screen?
No, it ends with them setting up all the next sequels for 23 and 24 and 25 Jump Street.
Right.
So kind of similar. I don't know if you can equate the two.
Yeah, because I was going to think that I don't think that Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey were the pioneers in newspapers on the screen to give you an ending.
Well, yeah. Nobody actually buys newspapers unless they're in a show and they need to give exposition. It's the same reason people still have answering machines.
Yeah. All right, that's it.
Right on. So, yeah, like I said, 6.3 and 60 on IMDb and 57.56 on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, and you know how I said that it was like kind of a missed opportunity that they didn't feature characters from the first movie? I will say that at least for the third movie, they brought Death back, which arguably is the best character to bring back out of every other character, even over Bill and Ted's. I'd almost like to see a Death movie.
With the Death standalone prequel?
Yeah, that's
Dark,
right.
Gritty reboot?
Dark, gritty reboot.
A la Batman Begins?
Yes, that's exactly well, I mean, what I want to see.
Death. A la Casino Royale?
Death does go on to have a brief solo career that doesn't pan out. I would have liked to see that movie.
Oh, well, it gets addressed in the third. You have to go watch it.
I have
to
go watch
now.
It.
Yeah.
it's one of those movies that's definitely just made for people who liked the other movies.
Oh,
like,
it's
not a good movie by any means. Yeah. Like, definitely could have used a little bit of more effort, but definitely knocks all the fan boxes, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for me, this movie, like, that last review that you had kind of summed it up in a way.
I'd have to agree too, yeah.
Yeah, where it's very much, they went for it. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what, you got to give them credit for going for it. They Last Jedi'd this shit.
Well, yeah, me and Colin have both said that, yeah, it should have just as easily been another story where they get the time machine for some reason. Yeah. Maybe this time they take it for their own nefarious purposes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, they'd get another history thing. But, yeah, they went for it, balls to the wall, and you have to appreciate that. That's for sure.
They need money, so they go to, like, famous heists in history?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh man, turn Bill and Ted evil without robot versions.
Or maybe they piss off the princesses, and they have to go back in time to stop themselves from pissing off the princesses or whatever.
Yeah.
And that ruins the future, so the future guys have to stop them. There's other ways this movie could have gone, and I have to respect that they just completely did something that I wouldn't have expected.
Jedi'd
Well, fuck Last Jedi.
And then the third one, I mean, you know, with Rise of Skywalker, they course correct, except they over course correct.
Let's just
get off this topic.
We'll talk
for another half hour. I'm bringing it back around because, like, with this one, the third movie in the franchise, course corrects, but just the right amount.
Okay.
Because they still acknowledge the fact that Bill and Ted went to hell. Like, as batshit crazy as the idea is in this movie, they do, like, at least acknowledge that it happens.
Stick with it canonically.
Yeah, it's still canonical. And so I do appreciate that, yes, this movie went for it. And, I mean, it's not a great movie, but I still had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Colin, this is your first viewing of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. So you said up at the top, you actually kind of enjoyed this one, and do you think you might have liked it more than the first?
Yeah, I think this one to me is more memorable than the first one. And I think it's just, I really like the death stuff. I think the death, I mean, the story is still pretty basic, but all the death moments really stand out to me, especially like the board game competition and all that.
I think they work really well next to a straight man. Because, like, with the history one, even the historical characters they bring back are silly in their own right. Yeah. So, like, even they don't have... When they're together, they're great to bounce off each other. But, yeah, they really, really benefit from having just a straight-laced character to play against.
Well, that's very true. And, I mean, with someone like Death, I also like how they subvert your expectations, because when he shows up, he's menacing. And they've got the part where it's like, who's that up there? And then all of a sudden, he's right behind them. And I like how, you know, like, you're like, uh-oh, here comes this imposing figure for the movie. And then they just, like, flip the script on it. Mm-hmm. And I like how you can definitely see Death's arc as he warms up to these guys. I mean, first it turns into, you know, like, he doesn't want to be beaten. Like, he's got the most compelling arc in this entire movie. Because, yeah, first he doesn't want to compete against them. But then it's like, no, okay, but you guys can't be the ones to beat me. But then later on, he's part of the band. He's going along on their adventures. You know, he loves his apron.
He comes around, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think on the whole, I have more feelings of enjoyment from watching this movie than I did for Excellent Adventure. Not that Excellent Adventure was bad or anything, but I just thought this movie, and I probably needed to have watched Excellent Adventure to fully understand, but I thought, I still feel like Bogus Journey is like, it's a good, I like sequels that are like additive. Like, I thought this was a good step up. I didn't think it didn't stay level and it didn't go down. I like it when it's a nice, we went on to something new. We didn't just rehash the same old thing.
Yeah, instead of having the 69 joke again, this time it's how many fingers am I about to hold on up?
Yeah.
So there's still flavors of the first movie, but the journey itself is definitely a much different movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know that when it came to rating the first one, I wanted to give it a high score. Like, you know, I wanted to give it an 80, 85 or something like that. But I said that I think I have to give it 69. This one, I feel, is one that I could give a 69, where it's like, it's not a great movie, but it is entertaining. But yeah, I mean, this is a, 69 to 75. That's kind of where I fall, I think, on this movie, is I still love it.
Yeah, all those IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes scores, they make sense. I mean, just because I'm biased or whatever, and I think it's a fun movie, I wouldn't go that low, I don't think. But, like, it makes sense. It didn't make as much money. I could see that them taking such a weird step in a different direction would kind of be shocking to theater-going audiences at the time.
Yeah.
But if I had to give it, I'd probably 70s, definitely. It's up there. It's a very fun film, and like we've all said, and we've probably beaten this point to death, it's very cool that they take in a different direction and don't do what would necessarily be the easiest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even looking at the movies that came out at the same time.
Well, yeah, that's hard to go against.
Hard to go against Terminator 2 and Boys in the Hood, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say it's a better movie than Naked Gun 2.5, which was in theaters at the same time.
And then I don't know how movies back in the day were, but typically, like, a marketing budget is double your actual film's budget. So they were just shy of making their money back.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At 38 if they spent 20.
Yeah. So do you have a number to throw on it, Colin, if you were to throw a number on it?
I'd probably fall like around like a 70%. Like, I think it's like a good, fun comedy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, thank God for death. Right?
Grab death by the cock.
Grab death by the cock. Get on out there and watch this movie. Well, there we go. That is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big, huge thank you to my son, Chris Wells. Chris, you're famous for last minute comments. Anything else that you...
At one point in the movie, to cover his tracks, Bill says that the princesses are from medieval England, Iowa. Not a real place.
Yeah.
Just so you guys know.
Excellent.
and meanwhile, they...
Cool shirts, though.
They do that to cover their tracks, yet they've got signs that say, Happy 521st birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So...
It's an inside joke. Yeah, you wouldn't get it.
If you like that show, oh boy, one thing you can do to really help us out. Well, Colin, what can people do to help us out?
They can go on iTunes or wherever, whatever podcast provider, catcher, I believe is what the cool kids call it. And go on there and give us some 5-star reviews. Say some nice things about us.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter what you say about us.
Leave a station comment.
You could just put station.
Tell us what the word Melvin means to you.
But yeah, it doesn't matter what you say. Those 5 stars, they just drive us up the charts. They help us get noticed. You know what else they can do, Colin? They can also just tell their friends. Word of mouth is important for us. Or if you want to go above and beyond and you got a few extra bucks a month, well, why don't you go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, donate a little money to the cause of this show. We're not necessarily trying to retire off of doing this show. We do it for fun, but there are costs associated with the podcast. So if you want to take ownership of this podcast and donate to us and get a shout out on our show, like executive producer Joshua Blum, patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our family.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. go on there and check us out. Give us some likes, give us some comments, give us some shares. And if you want to drop us a line, you can do so at icelikethisone@gmail.com. Send us an email and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Yeah, maybe we can bring it around again. Email us and tell us what your definition of a Melvin is.
Yeah.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.